And welcome everybody to yet another Bangers and Classics podcast. And that's with me, James Rupper, and him, David Malloy. And where's David been this week?
I have been, probably the square root of nowhere, James.
All right.
Done very well. I did go up to see the EV the other day. That was about it. Apart from that, just routine shopping trips. And I have to say, I saw a grand total of zero classic cars on my limited excursions. I've been working on stuff and doing other things around the house, etc., that's kind of taken up the time, so not really been very far afield. I imagine though, a jet setter like yourself will have been many places and seen many interesting things.
Possibly, David. Strange enough, you are correct that the classic car quotient has dropped off a cliff. I don't know whether it's because of the inclement weather that we've sort of had recently, a bit rainy and blowy. I've been around about in the Cooper, obviously spreading love and joy to people. And that included a man in a white van, who slowed down, wound down the window and said, "Do you want to sell it?" And it was a lovely way he said it. Yeah, do you want to sell it? He seemed like a classic car enthusiast to warm our hearts. But obviously, I declined the offer. I mean, very nice of him to make it, but there you go.
What speed was he doing before he slowed down, James? Mach 1, Mach 2.
They are the fastest vehicles on Earth, as we know. But they've got very good brakes. But there you go. I think he was just making a very friendly inquiry, so that was great. I'm sure he wasn't looking to make any money out of it. I think he was just a genuine car review, and he would have fitted it in the back of his van as well. And driven it away. So that was good. But I'll tell you, apart from that, actually, a bit of Far Eastern, and in particular Japanese, Bangerdom. I saw a Toyota Corolla, the sort of bug-eyed one from the late 90s, and that's a tiny car. Again, it was in a car park. There's loads of modern stuff around it. And it's a tiny, tiny, tiny little car that it is. I do remember those very clearly, and they do go on forever. And also a car I've seen a couple of times now, so I thought it was worth mentioning, was a Mitsubishi Lancer. Now, it wasn't the all singing, all dancing, winning a rally one. It was just the normal Equip, but it was a 2005, and it was in very spectacular condition. And if you go through reliability sort of stats from a few years ago, actually Mitsubishi Lancers used to be pretty much at the top. I'm sure they didn't sell that many of them, but the ones that did get sold were very, very reliable. I think they made them in Holland, at one point, at the late point, but they were very good. If you bought one, it would not break down, which is always a good thing about a banger. So really, that's it. That's it for me with those.
What about news? Any news for us?
Any news relating to my career?
Any news at all, James? Anything in Rupert world? You have a wide canvas to work on and from which to relate stories.
Well, strangely enough, I did notice that there was a special edition Mini. Mini is obviously one of my specialist subjects. there's that company that makes them for like £1 million each. It just really takes an old Mini and turns it into a Mini Cooper and charges a lot of money for it. What are they called? I can't remember the name of them. But they've linked up with Marshall Amplification. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And it's quite weird, isn't it, really? I mean, it's a very odd... I mean, I presume in Japan that would be quite a big thing. People would think, Mini and we've got Marshall amps. But it was quite weird in that there seems to be an amp taking up most of the boot space. And I don't know about it, really. And I don't think they put a price on it, but we know it's going to be possibly six figures or certainly very close to that.
I think so. Marshall amps. A friend of my uncle's used to play football for the Marshall Amplifiers Factory Works team.
Did he really? Wow.
We're not talking yesterday. Obviously, we're talking quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
He lived down near Milton Keynes, Bedford, down that sort of way. I think he worked in Bedford for a while. And yeah. I think he the first time he played for the Marshall team, he was fouled by a player on the opposing side. He said, "Oh, sorry about that, jock." my uncle's pal immediately growled back at him. "You will be, son."
Yeah.
I'm sure he was. Yeah, his name wasn't Jock either, but that probably didn't go down well either.
Yeah.
He didn't even work for Marshall Amps.
No.
It's just he played football and he was invited to play for the factory team. So he was a bit of a ringer.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be fantastic just to think that companies that made musical instruments and amplifiers would play football against each other. That'd be brilliant to think they played against Orange Amplification or Vox or Fender.
Yeah.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, some of the smaller companies, unfortunately, couldn't field a team like, you know, Sewer Guitars or the Schecter, you know, like that. Of course, they're based in America, so they'd be playing soccer anyway.
Well, that's right, yeah. Well, I mean, we play proper football here, don't we?
Not anymore, we don't, know.
Well, we don't, absolutely. I mean, that's...
Well, maybe not. Maybe in England you do, I don't know. I mean,
no, we don't, no.
No, it's kind of hammer-throwing up here most of the time now, I think.
No.
Yeah.
Did you manage to make contact with that second division footballer from the 70s to find out if he was happy with our choices for him?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, good.
I found him in the bookies. He was just he just came out of the pub himself to meet a young woman. So there you go, covering the three B's all in one. He's obviously doing well in the world. Yeah. He walked up in a Capri 280 Brooklands.
Oh, you're joking. Goodness me.
Yeah. Absolutely, yes. He said that my suggestion of Renault 17 was quite eccentric. That's a polite version of it. I think he was more in line with you, James. You know,
was he? All right.
Yeah. Typical.
As long as he didn't take a swing at you, Dave. That's the main thing.
No. He hadn't had enough drink at that point.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, so shall we play on and go to this week's banger, a classic? I'm not going to 70s with this one. We're going to a car that came in the late 90s. Essentially, there were two flavours of it. There was a Rover flavour and an MG flavour.
Yeah.
And it was the Rover 75. And before we start, I had a real bugbear with Rover round about this time. I may be wrong in that, but I am sure at one point they were offering something like a 25% discount to Peer of the Realms who bought their more expensive cars, which absolutely outraged me. I thought, well, these guys can afford it.
Yeah.
It should be the poor people you're helping out. But... it didn't do them much good anyway. Like many peers bought their cars, and of course they went away of all things. But yeah, the 75, James, came out under BMW ownership, didn't it?
It did, yes. It had a lot to do with it. It was quite a lot of 5 Series under it, and it did actually use, certainly the diesel engine was a BMW engine.
I think they modified the engine, though.
Yeah.
The diesel engine, I think they made some changes to it. Possibly it was actually slightly more advanced even than the contemporary BMW diesel engine.
No, that's right. I did drive it on the launch. I don't think they went to an exotic place because I think I was in Coventry, driving it. I rather liked it at the time. I thought it was okay. And it was a very good car. All the people I know who've bought one subsequently, which includes Richard Bremner's, still got one. They are very, very good cars. They're very comfortable cars. I think that's what they were designed to be. And it was great. And in a way, I think they could still make them and people would still buy them. And one of the oddities actually is when I was in Athens about 3 years ago, and there were loads of them. I mean, I tell you what, people abroad absolutely adored the Rover 75. And when I was in Italy as well, there was quite a few of them. They, it was a bit kitschy, what you would expect someone in Britain to drive. But they all seemed to like them abroad. I think it was probably a very, very low level export success.
I mean, the thing about it is, going back to the launch, James, there's a video out there of the Rover 200 launch, and it was abroad. It was, can't remember where it was, if it was Italy or Portugal.
Yeah.
I think we spoke about this off air one day, as it were, and I mentioned that one motoring journalist who arrived was complaining about the quality of the white wine in the flight over.
Yeah.
Blimey, well, you got it for free, mate.
Yeah. Well, at times, David, it's a wonderful profession to be part of. It's, very, very, very respected. And, you could be forgiven for thinking that people don't know what side their bread is buttered on. But there you go.
Yeah.
That's just the way it was.
Well, I was once another profession that's highly respected.
Yeah.
By those in it. Not by me, I have to say, but we're not going to go into that. Yeah.
Well, you're in a very respected profession as well, David.
What, me?
Yeah,
Gadgie.
Yeah,
professional Gadgie. That's it. Podcaster, yeah.
Professional.
It's possibly something beginning with P and ending in K.
Yeah.
Pillock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but there we go. Anyway, yeah, let's talk about the 75. Well, I didn't really like the look of the 75, James. I thought I didn't like the styling. I thought it was anachronistic.
Yeah.
I have to say, I preferred the makeover they gave it when they, for the MG version.
Yeah.
I thought it looked better. Mm. But I think they were trying to emphasize the traditional nature of the car. I don't think it worked. I think it needed to be a little bit sharper. But that said, it was quite a clever car.
Yeah.
You had, and unusually, James, of course, you could have a front-wheel drive version, but there was also a rear-wheel drive version for the V8 in both the 75 and the MG versions.
Very true.
Quite a good range of engines, a lot of K-series engines, the KV6, a V8 in the top model, and the BMW-derived diesel we spoke about.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was quite good in that sense, quite a comfortable car. It sold reasonably well. It was actually a well-enough engineered and built car. For me, though I'm not overly keen on the styling, I'll say it's a classic because there's a lot of good things in it, a lot of good things about it. And as we've said before, I don't think we're going to see another British car like that anytime soon.
No, you're absolutely right, David. It is a classic. It's also still a banger. You can still pay relatively sensible money for one that won't blow up. You know, you've still got to be careful about gaskets and stuff like that on the 2-liter and stuff. But on the whole, they are actually pretty solid buys at the moment. So, I'd run off and buy one.
Get us the bangers and classics, Nod. Perhaps one might come to dawn. Whisk us out for a nice drive one day, perhaps a limousine version, James.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think we should.
We can sit in the back and drink Pimm's and lemonade with some nice fruit in it.
Yeah.
And on that somewhat summary note, let's take a break. You're listening to the Bangers and Classics podcast, presented by Two Jesters Without a Script. So we're back after the break, and we're going to dive straight into this week's challenge. And the challenge is, and for 2 weeks in a trot, I'm going to say that I haven't cheated. Yep, I have adhered to the rules. The challenge was to find a car that Gavin Braithwaite-Smith, well-known motoring writer, has described as a hatchback. It's basically a saloon version of a hatchback. An example might be the Volkswagen Jetta or the Renault 19 Shamad. And it has to date from the 70s, 80s or 90s, must have been launched after the hatchback version. There's no fixed financial limit on this one, and we can source one from anywhere. And the other thing is there's bonus points for period features. For example, a radio cassette, velour seats, or a non-adjustable passenger mirror. So that is the challenge.
Strangely enough, I decided to focus on a vehicle which explained appreciation to me. So in 1984, there was a bloke who bought one of these and then realized the error of his ways and wanted to part exchange it. And from whatever the price was that he paid, it was probably, you know, sort of 7,000-9,000. It was worth, you know, maybe two, maybe it was so, I mean, you could see his face drop when you told him how much we would pay for it against another car. And so it's always stuck with me. It's a very, very odd name as well, although it's a very cool name, which wasn't around in the UK for very long, but survived elsewhere in the world. But it's a Volkswagen Santana, quite cool, which, as people will know, is basically it was a renamed Passat for about 5 minutes over here. And then they realized that it was terrible marketing and that nobody knew what a Santana was. And then it became a Passat again, effectively. So it was a very short-lived model. You can't find any over here because obviously they've all been rusted away and so forth. But there's still loads around in Europe, and we would have to go to Hungary to find a 1.6 with wonderful brown velour finish inside, and that was €2,200. Had a very entertaining drive out to Hungary to pick it up, but it's a well-used car. It's 240,000 kilometres, all the description seems to be in German on a French website, so it's very complicated. It looks okay from the pictures, but it's obviously been used. But it's a, you know, sort of quite bright and breezy. Really, doesn't seem to have a lot of rust on it. Seems to be like original paintwork and thing. It's just probably been quite a hard used family car, but it's quite old, and it's 1982, so it's been around for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I rather like that, so I'll go and buy.
Well, life begins for it. It's just turned 40 this year.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I think I went abroad as well.
Did you?
Yes, but I've gone to Spain.
Oh, right.
And I went for a car that was never actually sold here. It was a Renault 7.
All right.
Which is basically a booted version of the Renault 5.
Yeah.
It looks very ungainly. Mm. For one reason, its boot sits low on its bonnet. But there we have it. It did pretty well. It was produced for nearly 10 years, and they sold almost 160,000 of them. It was made by Renault's Spanish subsidiary, which was Fassa Renault.
Yeah.
Launched since 1974. You could only have it in a four-door form. Slightly larger wheelbase than the hatchback 5. Had chrome bumpers rather than the impact-absorbing bumpers of the 5. It was given a mild makeover towards the end of the decade in 1979, and production ended in 1984.
Yeah.
It wasn't continued when they've introduced the new style Renault 5, the Super Sank. Anyway, the one I have found is in Spain. It's a Renault 7 TL Confort B, whatever that is. It's €3,500. It's in Valencia. And it comes in a rather unusual pastely yellow colour, almost sort of washed out colour. But the bodywork, I have to say, looks in very good condition indeed. All the hubcaps are present. Badging and the rear is a little faded. It looks all very straight. Inside, you have a lot of brown. The dash is, I think, black. It's got hints of brown in it. It's quite a browny black. The door cards are brown. The carpets are, you guessed it, brown. The seats are cloth, and they are brown. There's quite a lot of exposed metal on the inside, but not that we mind that, obviously, in Bangers and Classics. Very basic dashboard. And it's got that most brilliant of 70s period extras, James. It's got, an AM/FM radio. And you've got a four-speed manual gearbox. Motor power is a tried-and-trusted Renault 1037cc engine. You got loads of boot space, and the people who are selling it lifted the carpet in the boot so you can see the boot floor, and it all looks very, very nice indeed. It's done 132,000 kilometres. It's had, apparently, a new alternator, brake discs, and a servo. It's said to be very original in perfect condition. And for €3,500, I reckon you could go a lot further and not find anything quite as nice and quite as unusual as that. So I'm going to say that's a really good buy, particularly if you live in Spain. But even if you don't, nice looking little car, very unusual. You take that to the Festival of Unexceptional here, it'll woo people because there just isn't going to be another one to compete with. That's my selection for this week. And I did keep to the rules. Yay!
Well done.
Yeah. I'll probably break them again next week.
Yeah, that's okay. Rules are there to be broken.
Oh, we have this conversation. Well, most weeks, don't we?
We do, yeah. But
You usually prompted my disobedience of them.
Yeah.
But never mind. Anyway, we're going to move on from that to another car that's roots in a French car. It's the Talbot Solara. And it's in the danger zone, James. It's a danger mobile.
Oh, was it a Solara or was it a Tagora?
Solara.
I got very excited there when you mentioned...
Solara, I'm afraid. Did I say Tagora?
I don't know. You say Tagora, I say Solara.
Well, Solara
you
anyway.
You call the whole thing off.
Exactly. It's the one that sounds like an ice cream. Yeah. The Waltz ice cream. Would you believe there were only 11 on the road in the UK as at the most recent set of figures, with only another 40 on Sorn? And that's quite sad, really. It wasn't the greatest car in the world. Obviously, what we're talking about, basically, you could say it's a hatchback as well. This is effectively a booted Chrysler Alpine. Though I think it was slightly longer on the Alpine and had a huge boot. It came along in 1980, about 4 or 5 years after the Alpine, and it was always badged as a Talbot. And it only lasted till 1985. And unfortunately, it was a case of diminishing returns. Obviously, front-wheel drive, you had the two Poissy engines, in the UK was the 1294 and 1592cc engines, though I believe some abroad had the 1442cc version of the engine. Various trim models, and some models had a 5-speed gearbox with Citroën CX, whilst others used the venerable Simca 4-speed box. The problem is, it didn't really sell that well, James.
No, well, not many Talbots did by then.
It's not a
running joke, unfortunately.
But for a saloon based on a hatchback, it actually looked pretty handsome. From some angles, and there's one in particular I'm looking at just now, it doesn't look unlike the later Renault 9. I can see a similarity between them from the front three-quarter angle. It wasn't a bad-looking car. It was competent rather than exciting. It could have done a lot better and probably would have sold a lot better with better engines, because it's smaller engines, and the engines, as we all know, were prone to rattling. And put a lot of people off, I think. They were quite, I suppose, agricultural units, and certainly by the time the 80s came around, the design was quite old. It wasn't the success that the Alpine was. The Alpine sold like hotcakes, initially at least anyway. The Solara, in 5 years, I believe fewer than 185,000 Solaras left production lines across Europe. And that's not a great return on what was intended to be a mainstream model, I would say. What do you think, James?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a dreary old thing, really. I've got the production figures down as 98,150, but that could have been just what was sold here. Yeah, it was 3 inches longer than the Alpine, but I don't think people were really very bothered about Talbots by then. And yeah, it was just a downward spiral. I think it became slightly more interesting when they brought back the Alpine as the Talbot Minx stroke Rapier.
Hmm.
But they sold even fewer of those. I'd love to know how many of those are still around. But yeah, Last time I saw a Solara, I don't know when that would have been. That would have probably been in the 1980s, but I've certainly not seen one for a very, very long time, and maybe with good reason. It was just a very ordinary package, wasn't it?
I think it was okay. I mean, yeah. The Alpine was quite, in some respects, advanced when it came out. It was a hatchback, which, even though the concept had been around since the Renault 16, there weren't that many hatchbacks, 1975, 76. Front wheel drive, rack and pinion steering, a lot of good things about it from an engineering point of view that we came to take for granted anyway, but then it was kind of ahead of the pack, made good use of space. Its problem was the build quality could have been better, and the engines weren't really up to the job. With better engines and better build quality, I think it could have sold even more than it did. And the same goes for the Solara. I think it was, how to describe it, it didn't do anything particularly well. It wasn't great at anything, but the engines perhaps aside, and the gear change wasn't the best either. It was competent. You know, it was as good as the competition, really, in many respects. The competition, you know, wasn't, you know, perhaps wonderful, but the market it was aimed at, you didn't have to be wonderful. It was a competent car that did its job, and pleasant enough to drive, comfortable, certainly very comfortable to sit in. Yeah. And that's what families wanted, that's what families needed, and I think they still do. It didn't have a lot of bling factor or glitz, but you know, the interior, etc., was well designed, it was quite attractive. As I say, it was a comfortable enough place to sit. As an example of a mark, a revived mark that didn't last very long, there you go. There's a Solara. Inexpensive to buy, I still imagine. They've always been inexpensive, and you ain't going to see another one. From my point of view, I would say, yeah, buy one. And also, they're not too difficult to work on. As long as you keep the tin worm at bay, mechanically, they're not that complex. I would certainly hope that some people will be tempted to take on board a Solara, even as a project, and keep it going, because it'd be a sad day, I think, when, you know, the last Solara disappears from our shores. But I always liked Chryslers and Simcas and Talbots anyway, so I'm perhaps a bit biased. You're more of a Germanic type when it comes to cars. And Italian, of course, now.
Yeah.
Would you rush out and buy one, James, when it came on the market? Shocking. No. I don't know. I could see you in a Solara.
Well, could you really?
Lots of room in the boot for your guitarist, mate.
Well, that's okay then, yeah. But, right out of mind.
I mean, if we'd bought you one in the 80s, you know, yeah, back then.
No.
You know, back in your ZZ top heyday, you're complete anonymity guaranteed. You wouldn't have to wear a false beard anymore.
No, I don't know. It's a terrible car then. It's a more terrible car now. I can't get enthusiastic about it at all. I do apologise, people.
Oh, dear. Well, all I'm going to say is, if he doesn't like those, just start with EVs, people. That's all I'm going to say. And I think on that note, I'll simply say, thank you very much for listening. Hope you tune in next time around when perhaps we'll find a car that James likes. Then again, who knows?
Well, you're off to Spain, I'm off to Hungary, and I'll see you next week when we get back with our respective saloons.
Yeah, I'll probably bring a vat load of sangria back with me as well.
Yeah.
Well, summertime's coming.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. You know, Pim's, one vat of Pim's, one vat of sangria, another vat of beer. Yeah, that should do. Yeah. Anyway, cheerio, folks.
Yeah, cheers, everybody. Chin, chin.